Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey, folks, welcome to another edition of Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we'll be visiting with Zane Johnson, who's financial officer for the city of Tracy, and he's going to be talking with us about the wasteful spending in government, something that we're all becoming more conscious of, and we're seeing that something's got to be done, and perhaps Mr. Johnson can help us with that a little bit. And I've got just a little quick thing I'd like to put forward here. I'm having to do with my situation, and it caught my attention. The Santa Barbara Village is hosting a workshop on adjusting to age-related hearing loss, which is something I've just had happen to me fairly recently, and they've got a number of speakers together. They're going to be talking about hearing loss, and that's going to be tomorrow evening at the Bronfen Family Jewish Community Center on 524 Chapala Street in Santa Barbara. It's going to be on Friday, December 6th, from 10 to around noon. We suggest folks go by there if you've had hearing loss and you're interested in some. There'll be some people from the industry and some people from the Hearing Loss Association of America, Santa Barbara chapter. Anyway, it's interesting because this is something that touches on many of us as we get older, and it's kind of a dark area. We'd love to have some understanding of it. So come on down there. That'll be at the Kaufman. At the Bronfen Family Jewish Community Center, 524 Chapala Street, on Friday afternoon. Friday morning from 10 to noon. And come on by.
Well, very good. Today, this is actually happening today, free flu clinics for community residents. Santa Barbara Public Health Department, Santa Barbara County Medical Reserve Corps are providing free flu shots for community members over the age of 2 at clinics in Goleta and Lompoc. This happening today. Locally, Goleta Valley Community Center, 5679 Hollister Avenue, and also at the Lompoc Fire Station, 115 South G Street. That's 115 South G Street. Again, for Santa Barbara area, today between 3 and 7 p.m., Goleta Valley Community Center, 5679 Hollister Avenue. This is absolutely free for anyone 2 years or older. For further information, give the health department a call, 346-8420, 346-8420. And, of course, Christmas Major, The Fire Horse That Saved Christmas by Dave and Barbara Hubert. We'll have a spot on that throughout the show. Make sure you get a copy of this. It's a fantastic book. Not only a great story, but it has a lot of the history of the fire service going all the way back to the mid-1800s, the way things it used to be. And with that, we move into today's guest, Zane Johnson. Thank you very much for taking time out to be with us, sir.
No problem.
What caught my attention was a survey that your association did, California Society of Municipal Finance Officers. You're the group of folks that I refer to frequently on this show and as well as in my articles. When we say somebody's got to pay, you guys are the ones that actually pay the bills, correct?
Correct. Have to figure out how to pay the bills as well.
So this must create kind of an interesting background. How did you get into this line of work?
Well, I've always had an interest in municipal government. In fact, at age 26, I was the mayor of the small city that I grew up in, and that really piqued my interest. So I'm a good numbers person, and I ended up in finance, and I worked for the city of Tracy for 27 years before retiring earlier this year. But one of the things I wanted to do before I retired was, because over the years I've seen some things that, you know, they come across your desk and you just kind of roll your eyes at. And you can't say no to everything because you have to work with other department heads. You have to get along with people. Otherwise, you can't achieve or accomplish anything.
Correct.
And if people just isolate you as just the naysayer all the time, you won't be effective. So there were things that you'd see that, you know, if I was in all power, I would not have approved. And so I wanted to find out what those things were all throughout California from all of my colleagues. So I did a survey, and I received 228 responses from various finance officers throughout California cities. And it was pretty amazing. some of the things that I had in mind when I got the results, they were validified. Oh, I'm not the only person who thinks this. You know, all these other people think this too. And so that adds validity to the own opinions that you had formed over the years. And the other thing was that as I retired, I did not want to stop being an advocate for fiscal efficiency in government. And here's some information that I can use for that advocacy.
Well, you know, having been in countless meetings over the last 30-something years, the finance folks almost represent the parents in the room, if you will. All the kids want to go out and buy this, go here, go there, do this, do that. And yet somebody stands up and says, well, we can't. We don't have the money. And that must create kind of a hostile environment for your folks because you're the ones that have to put on that position.
That's a great analogy, and that's exactly accurate. Sometimes the parent has to have the big picture in mind, and that's the fiscal officer. They see the big picture that crosses departmental lines.
So I'm curious, Mr. Johnson, when you put out your survey to the cities around California and you got 200 and some responses, how many queries did you actually put out there? Like what percentage of them responded with their information?
Well, we have about 1,700 members in the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's roughly a little over 500 cities in California.
Right.
And so I sent it out via our email network. Mm-hmm. Now, not all members are on that, and there's multiple people from cities that are on that. So you kind of have to look at the 500 figure of cities in California, I think it's 535 or something like that, to say, well, I got 228. That's a pretty good representation,
right,
of 535
yes.
cities.
So do you think that there was reticence in replying simply because of some ramifications, perhaps, or it was just that people didn't get the information that they were expected to?
Well, they're busy. And so here's something someone else not in their organization needs from them.
Right.
So
they're
already stretched pretty thin, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, because I was retiring, because I had been past state president of the organization, I knew a lot of people, I really kind of put on the full court press to get as many responses as I could. And people did respond to me kind of as a courtesy and to, you know,
Was there any particular preponderance? I'm sure that's where these 10 points come forward, and we'll be talking about that later, but I'm sure that broke down in some interesting ways, those responses.
Yeah. See, you know, I had my own idea, okay, the top 10. And I was fortunate. I worked for a fantastic organization, okay, but we're not perfect either. And I had an idea of some things. And so I think like 6 of the 10 I kind of had in my mind. What I did was I saw people's responses, and this person said it this way, this person said it this way, oh, but that's the same thing. And
right.
I put them into the 10, and I gave those 10 names.
Got it.
Okay.
Why does your factual credibility as opposed to being opinion, how did you manage to deal with that question?
Because we are dealing with facts here.
Right, yeah, numbers don't lie. People do. That's one
exactly
of our mantras.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. You know, people over the years, I heard some of you, they assert that, well, you're hiding money somewhere. Huh? I cannot hide money. Every cent this city has is accounted for, and it's audited by outside CPAs every year. Okay, and then, you know, we have all our budgets and all our financial reports online, and we had those online for years before anybody even required you to do that. And so you can't hide anything in municipal finance, folks. It's all there. We're the only city department that annually has someone from the outside come in and audit their work for the year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, our credibility is there because, like I say, numbers don't lie. In these instances, these are coming from people who see this every day in their city, okay? And so they didn't invent that their city spent money this way, okay? That's a fact. Their city spent money on this item that they're talking about. So these are people you should pay attention to. They're not politicians. They're not going to, And in fact, this is unfiltered. Some of this stuff that people told me, they might get in trouble if they, you know, said that at a public meeting in their own organization.
Sure. Well, let's take a break here in a second. We're visiting today with former finance officer for the city of Tracy, Zane Johnson, on Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the phone and the board for us today. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290 live at newspress.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today, we're visiting with Zane Johnson, who's a financial officer, or was. He's retired now from the city of Tracy. And we're talking about the way that money is spent in government and perhaps ways of lessening that, because there is waste there, and taking a look from someone that knows.
Well, let's come to the top 10 ways cities waste money. And the first eight are not in any particular order based on the survey results, but the last two are. So we start with number 10, organizational structure. Number 9 is no one wants to say no. Number 8 is greasing the squeaky wheel. Number 7 is poor performing employees. Number 6 is right hand versus left hand. Number 5 is programs in searches of an audience. Number 4, no evaluation of programs. Number 3, new definition of successes. And the last two in the order is police services. And finally, the number 1 is fire service. And that doesn't make us any friends, but that's what the survey says. Let's go back here and kind of start with number 10 and work our way down as to what does it really mean, and maybe perhaps an example in each one of these, because I certainly agree with some of them. Starting with organizational structure, let's talk about that a little bit, how government, especially at the municipal level, is structured and why is it so expensive?
Well, what's occurred here over the recession is that most cities had their revenues drop dramatically. So they went in, they had to do budget cutting, and many people had, organizations had to shrink. And so they'd go into a room and say, well, we've got to cut 10 positions. And so what would happen is the management-level staff of that department would cut 10 positions, but it wasn't management positions. They'd cut 10 maintenance workers or something. And so the people that were actually out doing the work, mowing the parks or whatever, their positions were eliminated. And so then you ended up with top-heavy organizations as a result of that. Okay, what we did in the city that I work for, the city of Tracy, I'm very proud of, is we got our department heads together and we said, here's the number that your department, you're going to have to get to this number, okay? And you bring us back a plan to do that, and you cannot prepare this plan with your management staff. This is you and you alone, because quite honestly, there's positions in your management staff that need to be eliminated. And plans were brought back to us, the city manager, myself, and the assistant city manager to review, and we rejected some of those, so they got it right. So as our organization shrunk, most of that went at the mid-management level. And in the end, this community did not see the reduction in services associated with the reduction in personnel.
Mm-hmm. Well, hasn't this been going on since Jarvis? I mean, not just since the money crunch, but since Prop 13 went into effect. And we've seen this, you know, out over the whatever it is now, 30 years, that administration doesn't cut their own. I mean, this isn't new news, right?
It's basic human instinct.
Right.
Okay, all right.
Right,
so
exactly.
You think a person is going to sit there and say, well, yeah, I need to cut my position. Okay, very few people do that.
Well, they got mortgages to meet and school.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, no, it's understandable. But we don't have to cut all the positions. What if we just cut back on salaries and benefits?
Or find, and there's different ways to get there, too. Even if we cut positions, how can we do our work differently? And do we have time to allow this organization to shrink through attrition and whatnot so there aren't layoffs? There's many ways to get to point B from point A, okay? But let's get to point B.
Right. Early retirement,
well,
all that
sort
of thing.
Yeah.
Let's get to number 9, and this is one of my favorites, because when I started in public work back in 1977, no was everywhere. I mean, that was the universal answer to everything was no. And then somewhere around the 80s, that trend changed. And you're absolutely right. Nobody wants to say no anymore. They might want to create blockages, but nobody's actually going to say no. It's interesting that the finance officers pegged this.
Yeah. 62% of our survey respondents strongly agreed or agreed with the statement, in my organization, the finance department often has to disapprove items like a budget request, et cetera, that should have been disapproved by management personnel at the originating department. So it's because you have managers who have a philosophy that they want to be liked.
Sure.
See, I want to be liked. I want to be the nice, the guy that wants to be liked. Okay. And so, you know, you gave the analogy early on about the parent. Okay. Well, you know, some parents, they're the one who, oh, yeah, you know, and then, you know, they ask the mom because she'll say yes, and they don't ask the dad because they'll say no. Okay.
Right. Of course.
So, right. So, I mean, the same thing's occurring here is you have things that are, and they'll let something slide knowing that finance will say no to that. Okay. All right. And then they don't have to be the bad guy.
Sure. A lot of these folks have career ambitions. They want to go up, and they don't want – and I think this is one of the areas where the Internet and video and all these things have come and have two-edged swords, because one little 30-second clip of somebody saying no can be used against them 20 years down the road when they're trying to do something. So I understand the interest in saying – not saying no.
Right.
But that's not what your job is. Your job is to provide the oversight, and no is part of that process.
Right. Your job is not to be here just to be liked. Your job here is to do your job and to be respected. And you can be respected by explaining to people why you can't approve that and to be consistent with it throughout it so that you're not favoring one person or another. Okay? Just be consistent. And people will respect you for that.
In the long run, absolutely.
That's correct.
And number eight is greasing the squeaky wheel. I would add to that the whiners.
Well, they are squeaky wheels.
Yeah. This, too, is also interesting because that was, as I read the results, that's both internal and external squeaky wheels.
Yeah. A squeaky wheel is someone in the community that gets an inordinate amount of resources from the city because they're the constant complainer or whatnot, okay? And what happens is nobody wants – you get sick of dealing with these people from a staff level, so you do whatever. And the local political leaders, they're like, you know, get that person off my back, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so the city manager's directing this or that, and people are running around doing all sorts of things because this person is always doing something. We had one lady in our community, she complained about people speeding on her street. Okay, and so the police did, no one's speeding. And she said, yes, they are, come back to me. So we put out those little things that measure, you know, how fast you go on a road. Okay, and got the data back. You're in the 95th percentile, no one's speeding. Yes, they are, okay. So then you bring the little flashing sign over, your speed limit is da-da-da-da, okay. And then, no, they're still speeding. And the next thing you know, the cops have to go over there and see if they can write any tickets. Well, then she wanted speed bumps and wanted speed bumps and wanted speed bumps. So you know what? She finally got speed bumps. And 6 months later, I kid you not, she was back at a city council meeting asking for the speed bumps to be removed.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because now we have a new issue. That's the trashing of the front end of the vehicles and the fire department and the rapid transit and everybody else that are trashing their vehicles over speed bumps. Yeah. And every community has a squeaky wheel.
Right. Well, it's more about getting attention than it is actually solving a problem.
Right.
And so you solve the problem, but at the same time, that's not going to take care of their problem, which is they need to be recognized, et cetera.
Returns back to the issue of nobody wants to say no.
Right.
Nobody wants to be at a city council table saying, Mrs. Jones, no, we're not going to do that. 95% of the vehicles are driving in a safe, reasonable, prudent manner under normal conditions. We are not investing time, money, resources into your issue.
I appreciate you for your concern, but we're moving on to the next item.
Wish you very best of luck in your future endeavors.
They overestimate the influence of these people. Most people see those people and know they're whack jobs, okay?
Right.
They're not politically astute people that everyone's going to follow.
Correct.
Exactly.
Moving forward, number seven, poor performing employees. And we all have examples of this. I wrote in one of my articles that the poor performing employee frequently becomes such a headache that you just let it ride because it becomes all-encompassing to an organization to deal with.
Yeah, I didn't have this one because, you know, I worked with some pretty great people in our organization, I thought, and I was surprised, actually, when I saw this come in. Over 50% of the respondents to the survey indicated that in their organization during the last 4 years, there had been non-performing employees that received compensation to resolve a complaint or allegation. And of those, only 5% were ordered to do so by an arbitrator.
Which means they're just paying people off.
They're paying people to, because they don't want to deal with that person.
Sure, and we see that everywhere.
And management can. They have to document it, go through progressive discipline. But they need to do that because that person is counterproductive to the organization, and it is a something that just sucks up motivation from your other employees.
Well, as we're seeing here locally, one employee, or in this case a volunteer, can bring an organization completely to its knees and problems. You hire your problems is my mantra, and a lot of these are preventable. We've got to come up to our next break. We're going to hold off. We'll come back to number six, right hand versus the left hand. Visiting today with former finance officer Zane Johnson from the city of Tracy, former president in 2003 of the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers Association. On Community Alert, Ted Adams, Mike Williams. We'll be back with you in just a minute. Don't forget your free flu shots this afternoon at the Goleta Valley Community Center. Community Alert, not it but when, on KZSB AM 1290.
Hey folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Zane Johnson, who's a former financial officer, City of Tracy, and he's quite adept at ferreting out some of these situations with wasteful spending in government, and that's what we're doing.
Well, the Santa Barbara Public Health Department and Santa Barbara County Medical Reserve Corps providing free flu shots today. This will be at the Goleta Valley Community Center, 5679 Hollister Avenue, 5679 Hollister Avenue, between 3 and 7 p.m. today. Everyone 2 years in age and older are encouraged to come down and get your free flu shot. For those who are wondering who's paying for this, the event is funded through the Federal Center of Disease Control, better known as the CDC, Public Health Emergency Preparedness Program. And this is an important program, and it is free. People are encouraged to take advantage of it. Again, between 3 and 7 tonight, Goleta Valley Community Center, 5679 Hollister Avenue. Also available at Lompoc Fire Station, 115 South G Street in Lompoc. Further information, 346-8420, 346-8420.
And an aside to that, to avoid over congestion at these centers, people that have Medicare need to know that they can go to pretty much anywhere that supplies flu shots and get a free shot.
That's a good
point. So if you are at an age where you get Medicare, just go to pretty much anywhere and you can get a free flu shot, and that'll perhaps reduce some of the population explosion at those free clinics.
Well, let's get back to our top 10 list here. This is not the Letterman list. This is the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers Association list. Six, right hand versus left hand. We don't know what we're doing in the same room, do we?
No. And no, everyone knows what they're doing, but they can be counterproductive with each other. I guess the classic example is you have your economic development folks who are trying to bring new business to town. And then you have your planners who are trying to impose as many different higher and higher, I don't know, building aesthetic standards or whatever, and that adds cost and cost and cost to building. Or a planning processes where this person needs to come in and they have to go to, they have to do this thing, then they have to do this, then they have to do this, and it has to go here for this review, and it has to go to this, and every one of those involves a fee to pay for this review and that review. And that's counterproductive to the people that are working just as hard in the organization to try to bring in new business. And so you can have entirely competing different goals, and people can be off doing their own thing without regard to each other in the organization.
Well, I think additional thing in this area is a different departments competing for funding, and so you end up having an adversarial condition develop within your organization because people are working on their budgets and trying to
sure. Well, it goes a step further in my view. It's the other side. It's the public trying to get their project done or a corporate whatever. And every one of these steps requires lawyers, consultants, engineers, contractors, you know, experts, environmental impact reports, CEQA, EQA, whatever. The costs just skyrocket for everybody, and so much of it's visible from the outside is just being the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing.
Exactly.
Moving to number five, programs in search of an audience. And this is a big one because I think this is one of the fundamental program problems with the grants. in that people go out and they get the grant and then they say, okay, what's the program going to be? Or they go, we need a program so we can go get a grant so we can siphon off the administrative fees. I really thought this was a big one. What are your views?
This was my favorite one.
Okay, so we're on the same frequency.
And here lies a great potential, and there's a silver lining in this, okay, all right? First of all, there are some really wonderful, passionate people working in local government, okay? They're people who really care about their community and what they're doing. That's wonderful. That doesn't always exist in every organization. It doesn't necessarily exist in a private business, okay, all right? It exists in your community, and that's a wonderful thing, but it can get misdirected, okay? And people's passions get misdirected. They get misdirected into creating some program through their passion that they think is great, and it doesn't really do anything, okay, all right? So you have a wonderful thing there, but it's getting misdirected. And so you have this passion that leads to people creating programs thinking they're doing good, okay, all right, even if no one's coming to them, okay?
Right.
And if no one's coming to them, then their next belief is, well, we need to educate the community that they need this, okay, all right, and then they will come. Okay.
Well, this is a great. Well, it's interesting because we see this a tremendous amount in disaster preparedness because everyone wants to feel as if they're helping. Everyone in the agency political realm wants to feel as if they're helping with this, and so they spend a tremendous amount of time and energy having these fairs where they invite all the agencies and they invite the public, and all the agencies show up, but the public doesn't show up.
Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of time with these darn things, and it's a difficult situation.
Well, it also goes to the somewhat of the financial charades because government knows that most of these things are going to get paid for at the state and federal level anyway. So why invest a lot of time and money into the illusion that something local is happening where, in fact, it quickly becomes state or regionalized and or whatever?
Well, another one of the things that is a pet peeve of mine is all of the seminars that people go to that spend public money and a large amount of public money, not only to pay for the seminars, but pay for their sleepover, their food, all that stuff. They go out of town for a couple of days. I mean, to me, that is nuts. But
I think that plays into the same area, does it not, Zane?
Well, you have to watch it, okay? Because it's important. If you're going to have an investment in your staff, okay?
Absolutely.
You're paying these people a good salary and benefit, okay? So some fields you have to remain current. Your field isn't static. There is new information coming.
Of course.
You have to get new information somehow. There are ways to get that, okay, all right, that don't involve traveling every 2 weeks, okay?
Exactly.
All right?
Exactly.
But there is a legitimate purpose in some, okay? You know, and again, you need to make that decision. I didn't go to our national conference. I didn't get any value. I went every year to our state conference because I got a lot of value. If I didn't come back with some idea that I couldn't implement, I can tell you, I literally saved hundreds of thousands of dollars times by getting an idea that I didn't know until I learned about it.
Absolutely.
So there's value to that. But again, you got to watch it too because you're right, it can get away from you.
Well, I think the business community has seen the slowdown of workshops, conferences, and the big trade shows. Trade shows are down big time. Companies are going out of business that used to do this stuff. I think government's just now going through some of the reality checks that business went through in the 80s and again in the 2000s. It's certainly in the public safety world. You don't see the big big symposiums that you used to see.
Right.
You're
Our
absolutely.
And the League of California Cities both do a lot of webinars, they're called.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
you just sit there right in front of your computer, and there it comes up. You're listening to them on the phone, and the materials are coming up right on your computer.
And you can respond on the computer and get your questions answered.
Questions.
So,
yeah.
So, I mean, it's good.
It requires a different form of discipline. I just spent this last weekend taking some online required classes from FEMA, and it's a whole other environment.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of just destruct yourself, because that's not the way I went to school and did my thing. But be that as it may, let's move to number four, no evaluation of programs. And this is a biggie also, and it also ties to the grants because, you know, did we actually accomplish anything? Maybe on paper we did, but in reality, did we do anything or did we just move the rocks?
Yeah, only 25% of our survey respondents indicated a yes to this question. Does your city have a regular process to measure the effectiveness of various programs it provides or funds? So a whopping 75% of cities out there don't have any process to evaluate their programs.
Well, hold
are these
that.
Things that we've been doing for 10 years, is this still doing any good?
No.
No. And in the rare occasion where someone actually does do an attempt to evaluate, what they do is they send the people who created the program to evaluate it.
Sure. And that becomes a conflict of interest and a moral hazard. With that, we're up to our next break, visiting today with former president of the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers Association, Zane Johnson, on Community Alert. We'll be right back on KZSB AM 1290.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Zane Johnson, Chief Financial Officer, retired City of Tracy, and talking about wasteful spending in government and some of the things to look out for and what we might do in the future.
Well, we're moving down our list here. We're at number three, new definition of success. And I thought this was kind of interesting because I almost think the success definition now is we didn't get sued, nobody got hurt, and everything's okay. Is that where we're at, or is it a little different than that?
Well, yes. I mean, 60% of the survey responders strongly agreed or agreed with the statement. The department responsible for a program or an event often describes it as a success, even if such program or event did not meet any of its fiscal targets or stay within the financial parameters identified for the program or event. And I will tell you about a story in City of Tracy. We have this cultural arts center, and once a year they do a you know, kind of bring in somebody big. And they brought in Kelly Pickler. Everybody knows Kelly Pickler is country western. She just won Dancing with the Stars. Okay, so she did this concert one night, right? And the concert sold out in 24 hours. Our theater holds 550 seats, okay, all right? And everybody's running around, oh, did you hear the Kelly Pickler concert sold out, da-da-da-da-da, and it's going to be great success, great success, great success. Well, her fee for that one performance was $50,000, and the 550 seats that were sold brought in $20,000. So that concert cost the taxpayers of the City of Tracy, $30,000. Now, how anyone can label that a success is beyond me, okay?
Well, the stadium was full, wasn't it?
Right. It sold out in 24 hours.
Well, didn't anybody check the figures or anything? I mean, that sounds like somebody lost their job over that.
Lost their job over that. That's the arts people.
Oh, I see.
They don't care that it required $30,000 subsidy. That promoted their venue. Don't get me on the arts people. They're irrelevant about money. They don't care. They don't believe they need to work in the confines of budgets and whatnot. That's anti-artistic.
Well, you know, when we talk about budgeting, and I find in my world that people don't understand that just because there's a budget does not necessarily equate to the fact there's money in the bank. and that just is foreign to folks. Equally foreign is the idea that it's 30 days to go before the end of the fiscal year, and we still got $4,862.27 in our account. We need to spend that, or we're going to lose it. So you guys go figure out what we need, and that costs $4,000. Yeah. And that was a wake-up call for me when I first started out, that something wasn't right in the operation.
Yeah. And there's ways to correct that. We did that in our organization, too. That's a cultural thing in your organization you can correct.
Well, of course. And I think that it used to be a sin to turn money back. I'm not sure that's the case anymore, is it?
Well, no, it isn't, because if you get your people to understand the connection between that and something else, then they get it, and then that doesn't happen.
Well, I worked in an organization that was large enough that it created its own economy. So the money never left the bank. All it is transferring on different budgets and line items and stuff. So there, nobody actually had to go to the bank and write a check or make a withdrawal or do anything like that.
Yeah.
Or even if they did do any transfer, it was interdepartmental transfers and stuff like that. So when you're working in that kind of world where you're creating your own weather, if you will, it's a little different than the small print shop on the corner that's trying to make payroll and pay insurance and do all the things and still comply with the litany of things that they're being challenged with.
Well, I'd like to go back for a second to talk about this thing about self-congratulation for projects. And
you need a plaque. Are you not feeling love today?
Well, I just think that that's just part of human nature. I don't think we're ever going to get around that. I think that no matter what the project and how it works, the only thing that you can do is put a good face on it. And I think we're just kind of stuck with it.
But I'll challenge you a little on that, because this is the problem that's more in your government than it is in the private sector. A lot of private sector advancement has occurred through trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Drugs that are on the market today, okay, came about after a whole bunch of them didn't work, and then they finally found it.
Right.
Advances in technology, okay, this didn't work this way, but you ultimately found it how it worked. Okay. The private sector success, they kind of celebrate that, okay? They don't poo-poo when something didn't work out.
Well, I'm more talking about events. I'm more talking about events than I am products, you know. I was thinking about the event situation and how
people... Well, this is a culture, though. See, if your culture is that we can't be realistic in our assessment of what we do because we're afraid of the publicity of something being labeled a failure, this is what's going to result.
Yeah.
See, in the private sector, a failure isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's part of product development sometimes.
Right. It's part of the only way you can learn is to fail.
That's right.
You don't learn anything when you're right.
Well, we're going to run out of time, and we're at the best two. And number two is police services, and number one is fire services. And we don't have enough time to deal with them individually. And there's a lot of similarities between police and fire as within the definition of what we're talking about today. How did these folks end up at the top of the list?
Well, they ended up at the top of the list because this is where most of the money in your city is going. And so, you know, you can try to wring out 5 cents out of the Parks Department budget, and you've got $500 going out of police, you know, hardly anybody is saying anything about. So the potential is really there. The short synopsis of these two elements are simply this. This costs a lot of money, and these people that work in these areas are your most expensive employees and highly benefited employees. So, and that's okay. We're not arguing about that necessarily. Okay. But they have to be used more strategically than they're currently being used. You have to look at your information and then schedule these people according to what your data supports. You don't need a fire captain on duty, all of your fire captains, all 24 hours. Your calls don't come in like that. You could have a captain on an 18-hour shift just as easily. Okay? So if you have 7 captains, maybe you only have 3 or 4 of them on 24-hour shifts. And then... because the calls aren't there. They're not going to be spread thin. And so this is what's occurring, that we take our very expensive people, but we're not using them strategically.
Well,
we need to use them strategically.
Their response is span and control, and in the case of the fire department, maybe they have NFPA standards and requirements for minimum staffing. And I mean, they've got a litany of legitimate reasons in their view as to why things are the way they are. This must make for some very interesting conversations in the back rooms of city halls.
Yeah, it does. I mean, if we cannot sustain the level of pay and benefits in the public sector with the number of people there with the available tax resources, okay? The handwriting is on the wall. Go look at everybody's current funding levels of their retirement funds with PERS and public safety, and you'll see that we're playing catch-up for the next 20 years.
Well, we'll never make it. But this goes back to the question number 9, where no one wants to say no. And this is one of the areas where I find perplexing. Why are local cities and county government, even the state for that matter, it's not saying no to this litany and the barrage of requirements and standards and rules and regulations that drive so much of this? Where's our elected officials in saying no?
Well, look at what most people run campaigns on. They are running on, this is, if they're an incumbent, they're running on, this is what I did. Look over here at this facility that we built. Look here at this program we did. Look at, okay, what you should be looking at and what voters should be looking at is, who's the most fiscally responsible person? Okay, all right? We had our mayor one year, and I, bless his heart, I love this guy. He ran re-election year, and one of his first bullet point in his campaign materials increased the city's level of reserves. Fiscal reserves, okay? So,
well, there's only a minimal number of people that would appreciate that.
There needs to be a greater number of people who appreciate that. The problems that ever you look around your community, you see is no one has paid enough attention to that, folks, politically.
Well,
the mess we're in financially in Washington, same reason. Mm-hmm. No one's paying enough attention to where the money is and how it's being paid and where it's coming from.
Well, speaking of paying attention, Richard's watching the clock on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert, the last segment of the show. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today, we've been visiting with Zane Johnson, who's the financial officer of the City of Tracy, retired, and I'm talking about wasteful spending in government, and we're going to pursue that for the few minutes we have left.
Well, unfortunately, I'd love to talk all day with Zane, but we're out of time almost. Zane, when I was doing my work on the tragedy of the commons, which focused on emergency medical services, one of the terms that I was introduced to, and it seems to be a driving force both within the law enforcement and fire community, is the term of equity of access, that everyone in our community deserves the same level of service, and that in order to provide that, we have to do this, 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 and this. Is that a reasonable thing, and is it attainable?
You have to be careful in how you use it, access, okay? And let's not forget that people also have a fundamental responsibility for themselves, okay, all right? And so when we get away from that, then we're into the things you just talked about. And I'll give you an example, okay? I'm a person, I don't have a bank account, and so I must pay my city water bill in cash. So now I have to have people staffed at City Hall to sit there and take people's cash payment, okay, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So you say, well, some people don't have bank accounts, so we have to have that available to them. No, why? Maybe if someone doesn't have a bank account, maybe it should be their responsibility then to go and buy a money order, and then they can mail in their money order so that the rest of the people don't have to pay for someone to sit there at a counter and take someone's money, okay, who do have bank accounts, all right? And so there's an example where someone has a fundamental responsibility. If you're living up in the hills with a lot of dry brush around, you have a fundamental responsibility to clear your property. If you don't, okay, you are increasing the chances of a fire on your property, okay? Well, why should everyone pay more to prevent some fire on your property when you haven't done what you need to do for your own self?
Correct. And yet that goes back to the issue of people not wanting to say no. Fire and city officials are reluctant to go up and actually get aggressive enforcing those kinds of things.
Right. And that's the problem with government, is that government is geared to swoop in and protect everyone.
After the fact, or at the time that it's an emergency.
Right, right. And some of that is self-serving, because people in it, by doing that, will earn more overtime or whatever, never, never, okay? We can't take the fundamental responsibility people have for themselves away from themselves and substitute government for that. Our society will crumble.
It is crumbling.
Well, that's that's why my publication was called The Tragedy of the Commons, was because at some point it collapses under its own weight. And there's all kinds of ways to experiment that. It's nothing that I came up with. I wasn't the clever guy that came up with it.
Well, but isn't the tragedy of the commons when there's an inequity in the way that people receive service because of their status in the social network?
Well, it's a form of it, but basically it's the idea that everybody trying to be equal, at some point it stops being equal. And with that, we're at the end of our show because the clock is a defining moment for us. Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson, for taking
the time out. So much.
Former finance officer with the City of Tracy and former president in 2003 of the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers Association, and they're talking about their recent survey and the 10 ways they waste money, or allegedly waste money, I should say. On Community Alert, thank you, sir. And until next time, at Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and live in the newspress.com website. The news is next. See you next week.
This has been Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, and sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council. Technical support for Community Alert provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when. On KZSB AM 1290, your News Press radio station.